Emily Bell Freeman is an author, a motivational speaker, a sought-after inspirational blogger with a wonderful blog called Multiplying Goodness that she co-authors. And she is the author of a brand new book called Celebrating a Christ-Centered Easter, Seven Traditions to Lead Us Closer to Jesus Christ. Emily Freeman, welcome to Finding God's Grace.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Let's talk a little bit about the inspiration for this book. What inspired you to write a book on the subject of Easter and traditions that might help someone find a little more meaningful holiday of the Easter season?
Yeah, I have four kids that as they were growing up, it was really important to me as we approached both Christmas and Easter that they didn't get caught up in the material aspect of that. And I wanted it to become tangible, this tradition, and something that they could hold on to and look back at as things that they had learned about Jesus Christ. And so I jumped into the scriptures and started reading and fell in love with the people who surrounded the tradition of Easter and that whole week leading up to the crucifixion and the resurrection of Jesus Christ. And I realized that each of those people had a lesson that they could teach us about their personal relationship with the Savior that would help us to have a closer relationship with Jesus in our own life. And so as I researched those, I wanted to teach them to my children in a way that they would be able to learn from and hold on to. And those applications all became hands-on experiences that would help them remember those scriptures and those lessons that they were learning. And that's where the book came from.
I found it real fascinating that you took seven disciples who all close to Jesus, and you found a lesson from each of these disciples, and that has how the book developed into these seven traditions. And you write from a first-person narrative. Why did you choose to write that way?
So I wanted people to feel like they were sitting in my living room or just right next to me, and we were talking about how we would help our children to know and believe deeper in Jesus and in what happened during that particular time of his life. And by doing it in first person, it felt more conversational and maybe more genuine for them to be able to hold on to.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about a few of the disciples, if you don't mind giving us a little sneak preview. A few of the disciples that you chose for your book, and a little bit on the lessons that they may have taught.
Okay, why don't we start out with Simon?
Okay,
Simon is one of the disciples that maybe we are less familiar with, and his story is found both in Luke and in Mark. He is a man who was a very humble means, and he enters the story in the moment just before Jesus is crucified as he's walking with the cross, and the Roman soldiers pull him aside and ask if he would carry that cross for Jesus. One of the things I love about the story the most is when Mark mentions this man's two sons, Alexander and Rufus, in his account, and I think of those two boys watching their dad carry that cross all the way up to where it needed to go, and them having that visual image of their father stopping what he was doing and taking a compassionate detour in that moment that was recorded in history forever. And I often wonder to myself, did those boys ever in later years ask their father to tell the story again about that day, about that time when he took upon him the cross of Jesus and what that meant for him? And so in our family, as I tried to help my kids understand that lesson and what it means to shoulder someone else's burden and to stop what you're doing and to take a compassionate detour in the middle of a moment where you may be on your way to do something, but someone else is in excruciating pain or going through a trial, how do we remember to do that? And so each of these disciples comes with a lesson that you learn from. And so we'll sit together one night, and for Simon's lesson, I just got a roll of jute because I wanted it to be something that represented his humble circumstance. And we tie that jute just in a simple bracelet on each of our wrists, everyone in our family, with a little knot, and we call it a forget knot. And we wear it for that whole week as a reminder to not forget to take the compassionate detour, to look out of our way for someone who is struggling or for someone whose burden is especially heavy, that we can stop and take that compassionate detour and shoulder that burden for a while and then remember the lesson of Simon.
Wow, that's a terrific way to approach that. And you mentioned, you know, you begin these traditions, and it could be something as simple as a little forget knot tied around your wrist. But these are things I know in my own family, things that we did when I was a child around the Easter holiday, especially that Holy Week that precedes Easter. Mm-hmm. That those things have stuck with me, even as an older adult, I can remember back, and they are things that you want to continue to do year in and year out. It's a beautiful way to approach things.
Well, thank you.
Let's talk about the book in terms of how somebody might get a copy of it and where it's available for purchase.
The book is easy to find. They can find it at their local bookstores, or it's online. It can be ordered at all the online retailers, so it's easy to find. We've also got a webpage set up at www.christcenteredcelebrations.com that people can go to and find it there.
Mm-hmm. We've been talking here the last few weeks on the show about strengthening our faith during this time of year, especially during Lent and Holy Week. We tend to want to do the same things over and over, and sometimes it's nice to just add something new, and you really give some really remarkable ideas in this wonderful book, and it's beautifully illustrated. And I think it's something that somebody can read and pull something out of and make part of their family's tradition for years to come. I want to thank you, Emily, for being with us. This has been great, and we look forward to the book launch and getting things together. And the book is entitled "Celebrating a Christ-Centered Easter," and seven traditions to lead us closer to Jesus Christ. Emily Bell Freeman, thank you so much for being with us. God bless you.
Thank you so much.
One of my passions is bass fishing. I'll drop almost anything for an opportunity to spend some time on a lake or a pond fishing. Hi, this is Tony Agnese. I find that fishing not only relaxes me, but teaches me patience as well. One of my core sins is a lack of patience. Sometimes when I'm fishing alone, I think of the apostles and why Jesus chose so many fishermen to evangelize, and why he has chosen me to do the same. Well, finally, I got it. I realized that Jesus picked fishermen because fishing for fish and fishing for men requires some of the same skills and techniques. To be good at fishing, you've got to know the habitat, the depth of the water, and the type of fish you're going to catch. It takes patience and perseverance. Here are a few of the rules of fishing that can be applied to evangelization. Number one, it's how you wiggle the bait. Some days you have to fish very slowly, jiggling the bait off the bottom and letting it drift back down. Other times you have to fish quickly, and every fisherman has his favorite retrieval style, like two twitches and a count of three, or three straight twitches and a count of five, and so on. Sometimes when we're talking to someone about Jesus and our faith, we have to go slowly. Other times, we can present information much more quickly. Sometimes our retrieval techniques require some information or a question, and then a pause before we continue for a response or an answer. Number two, if the fish aren't biting, you need to change your presentation or change your bait. Oftentimes, a bass fisherman will fish with several different colors before he finds one that the fish will hit. Other times, it requires switching from hard baits to plastics to spinners and back again just before the right one is discovered. Well, the same thing is true for evangelizing. Sometimes we have to switch our discussion from the Bible to the sacraments to the real presence and back again before we discover a person's interest. Third, the bigger the bait, the bigger the fish isn't always true. Some of the biggest bass I've ever caught have come on smaller baits. Sometimes subtle works better than a 2x4 to the head. Oftentimes, following a men's conference, the attendees will remember one line, one suggestion, one motivation, or one thought chosen from among the entire day's worth of material. Number four, if the fish are biting on one bait, well, fish that bait until they quit responding. One of the joys of fishing is finding just the right bait that'll work consistently all day. Fishermen are taught not to switch baits until they quit working. Sometimes a certain bait will work for a few minutes, other times the bait will work all day. I have begun many a day's fishing with the simple 4-inch scoundrel natural worm and fished all day. In evangelization, if an approach is working or has worked for you in the past, stay there. Start there. It may work for you time and time again. But be careful. It might quit working just as fast. Number 5, the barometer and the moon phases will affect whether fish are going to bite at all. You know, there are just some days that the dropping barometer reading or the bad phase of the moon will affect anything. You can drop the juiciest worm right in their face and they'll ignore it. Fishermen are trained to understand that when this happens, it's probably a good idea to just go home. The same is true for evangelizations. Some days, the person you're trying to reach just isn't in the mood. Nothing that you say or do will work on him that day. As with fishermen, it is probably best to drop the subject and save your discussion for another day. It might be better to delay your discussion than to turn the person off so that they'll never have any discussion with you about faith in the future. So whether it's fishing for fish or fishing for men, the rules are the same. Isn't it great that our Lord not only understood this, but chose his apostles by these traits? Now, I've heard many people speculate as to why Jesus didn't choose educated men to be his first followers. Why these fishermen, they would ask. Well, now, you know. This is Tony Agnese. Well, that's our show for today. We'll be taking the next 2 weeks off, but we'll be returning on the week of March 21st with another edition of Finding God's Grace. This is Tony Agnese. You can always check me out at tonyagnese.com or go to findinggodsgrace.com. You can listen to this broadcast again there by just clicking on the radio tab and going to this week's show. Thank you so much for being with us. We'll see you again on the week of March 21st. God bless you.
You've been listening to Finding God's Grace with Catholic storyteller, author, and broadcaster Tony Agnese. For more information on the program, go to findinggodsgrace.com. And while you're there, don't forget to subscribe to Tony's Monday morning inspirational blog message and his Thursday podcast, and follow Tony on Facebook, Twitter, and Google+ for more information. Join us again next time for Finding God's Grace.